As the Trump administration sets about the task of drafting its first national defense strategy, there's one thing defense experts agree on. Not every part of the Pentagon can be a winner, and some of the Defense Department's missions will have to take a backseat. Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu has details on some of the hard choices policymakers are facing.
The Pentagon is expected to deliver the National Defense Strategy sometime next year, something it's required to do by law. 1 year ago, Congress created the requirement that DOD deliver a new NDS every 4 years, and the assumption that the department will have to prioritize is built into the legislation. It tells DOD to lay out its highest priority missions, how it will prioritize among the threats it sees on the horizon, and the roles and missions of the armed forces in dealing with those threats. Defense experts who testified before the Senate Armed Services Committee last week pointed out that, at least in its recent history, DOD has not done a great job of prioritizing, picking winners and losers. But the fact that the new edition of the NDS is a classified document might reduce some of the political pressure to treat all elements of the department equally. Dr. Mara Carlin is an associate professor of strategic studies at Johns Hopkins and a former deputy assistant secretary of defense for strategy and force development.
Everybody, every service, every command cannot be a winner, and a classified strategy should be clear about that tally. The committee and those of us involved in defense strategy and budgeting in recent years know sequestration's pernicious damage, and we have a special responsibility to ensure it is not a partisan issue, but instead a bipartisan effort. The committee can shape future national defense strategies in a few important ways regarding coherence, assessment, and roles and missions. Changing the name of the Quadrennial Defense Review to the National Defense Strategy was a crucial first step for coherence. It will mitigate the cacophony of guidance, which resulted in confusion over strategic direction. As a next step, the committee should consider codifying a vision of the department's hierarchy of strategic guidance documents, which includes a singular overarching strategy broken into classified documents for force development and force employment.
In sorting through those priorities, experts say DOD will also need to contend with the fact that several global events have taken place in the last several years since the last time the department developed a broad strategic document, including nuclear advances by North Korea, military aggression by Russia, and new assertiveness by China in the South China Sea. Retired Lieutenant General Thomas Spohr, who leads the Center for National Defense at the Heritage Foundation, says none of the strategies in place today acknowledge the emergence of those problems.
Thus, the need for a new defense strategy could not be more acute, but previous efforts have had decidedly mixed results. Strategies articulate that we are going to do this and not do that. Assuming that Congress succeeds in appropriating additional desperately needed defense funding in 2018 and beyond, the Pentagon will still not be able to afford everything on its vast wish list, as they must contend with crushing needs for facility repairs and maintenance backlogs. Some capabilities, some organizations, and some elements of infrastructure are not as important as others, and the strategy should not pull back from identifying those.
Spohr called for a reversal of some of the strategic choices the Obama administration made, including a return to the notion that the U.S. should be able to engage in two major wars simultaneously. He says more troops should be forward deployed, and the military should be prepared to carry out long-term stability operations, something he says is a fundamental part of America's experience in how wars are actually fought. David Akmonik, a senior defense research analyst at the RAND Corporation, agrees recent events point to a return of the threat of major state versus state conflict, and that the strategy's top priority should be to ensure that the U.S. military can prevail in a major battle against China or Russia.
That probably sounds obvious, but it's not actually what we're doing today. We don't set that as a priority. As resources permit, we should also have the capacity to defeat a second adversary elsewhere. But pretending that you can spread the peanut butter across all of these challenges and have an adequately modernized force for the future is, as we have seen, an illusion. Again, the hard part and the part that in the end will determine the success or failure of our defense strategy and program will be generating the money needed to build a force that can meet these requirements, and then applying those resources in ways that do the most to move the needle against our most capable adversaries. The challenges that our adversaries pose are serious, but they're not intractable. Just as our gaming shows that we lack important capabilities with the program force, it also shows that we have real opportunities to change that, not through investments in highly exotic things like artificial intelligence and robots, but here and now, weapons that are either available for purchase or very far along in the development process.
Even if the defense strategy doesn't require the development of new exotic weapon systems, it will demand investments to make sure that the U.S. leverages the advantages it has, including relationships with allies, says Thomas Mankin, the president and CEO of the Center for Strategic and Budgetary Assessments. He says it should ensure that the U.S. rebuilds military capabilities, especially in the Navy and Air Force, to make sure it can win wars against large nation states while it carries out the rest of its global military commitments. But he says the U.S. military also needs to do a much better job of competing with those states during peacetime.
Just as our competitors are using many tools to do so, to include political warfare, information, economic incentives, and so forth, so do we have many available to us. What has all too often been lacking on our side, however, has been the political will to use them to incur risk, to demonstrate our resolve, and thus to deter. The force planning construct should focus on the need to both compete in peacetime with great powers, but also to fight and win a great power war, if only to bolster deterrence. The United States should also be able to do these things while deterring or fighting a regional foe. And the force planning construct should acknowledge the reality that the United States will be engaged in a global counterinsurgency campaign for the foreseeable future. One of the keys to doing these things is likely to be innovative operational concepts and capabilities. And here there's room for considerable creative thought and action.
To do all the things the experts who testified before the Senate last week agreed are necessary, rebuilding readiness, growing the armed forces, catching up on deferred modernization, they also unanimously agreed that extra money is going to be needed. The ballpark figure, they conceded, is around $1 trillion above and beyond DOD's current budget trajectory over 10 years. Spohr says it's higher.
It's absolutely over $1 trillion for the nuclear triad, plus to get to the 355-ship Navy, sir. The only thing I would balance that against is the cost to rebuild a city like Kansas City or something like that, recovering from a nuclear strike. And then I would echo what General Milley often says, and that is it's a huge cost to fight a war. The only thing more costly than that is to fight and to lose.
No. Members of the Armed Services Committee offered no objections or disagreements about the amount of money the department will have to spend if it's going to achieve the objectives that experts say the strategy should lay out. But one after another, Democratic members of the committee opined that the extra defense spending over 10 years will be politically impossible to achieve if Congress continues with a package of tax cuts it appears poised to send to the president's desk. That package, according to the Congressional Budget Office, would reduce federal revenues by $1 trillion over 10 years. Angus King is an independent from Maine.
I use the word preposterous, that later today or tomorrow we're going to pass a bill that is going to take between a minimum of $1.5 trillion and probably more like $2.2 trillion, once the cuts are extended, which everyone knows they will be, out of the budget, which I believe will make it flat impossible to do the work that you're suggesting is necessary for us to do. The implications of what we're doing today or tomorrow to trying to achieve the level of defense of this country that you all have told us is absolutely necessary, it just can't happen.
Jared Serbu, FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM.